Good evening, everyone. I call the Warwick City Council meeting for October 16th, 2023 to order. The clerk will call the roll.
Mr. McAllister?
Here.
Mr. Foley? Mr. Gephardt? Mr. Howe?
Here.
Mr. Lattiser?
Here.
Mr. McElroy?
Here.
Mr. Ricks?
Here.
Mr. Sinapi? Ms. Travis?
Here.
Eight present.
Thank you. At this time, I would like to have the Northeast Family Martial Arts come up and lead us in the Pledge of Allegiance.
I pledge allegiance to the flag of the United States of America and to the republic for which it stands, one nation, under God, indivisible, with liberty and justice for all.
Oh, say can you see by the dawn's early light what so proudly we hailed at the twilight's last gleaming, whose broad stripes and bright stars through the perilous fight o'er the
Thank you. At this time, I'd like to invite Daniel from the Northeast Family Martial Arts and his team here. They're going to give us a presentation. This month is Anti-Bullying Prevention Month. So, sir, if you want to introduce yourself and speak right into the microphone, thank you for coming.
Thank you for having me. Hello. My name is Daniel Luzzi, and as Mr. McAllister said, I am from Northeast Family Martial Arts in Coventry. We've been running a martial arts school since 1985, so we know quite a bit about this, and we're trying to help our community with bullying. So, again, we are located in Coventry, and this month at my school, we are dedicated to helping our students learn bully prevention skills in honor of National Bully Prevention Month. We are offering free classes for the whole month of October because we feel that every child should have an opportunity to learn how to defend themselves or prevent bullying from happening altogether. I think we can all agree that bullying is an epidemic that can only be helped by a community of people. This includes martial arts schools, school systems, sports programs, and anywhere else a child might be bullied. The system we use to teach bully prevention in our school is called HELP. This is an acronym that stands for H, Have a Plan. Our first step is to encourage families to have conversations about bullying. This can be a sensitive subject for families, but we want them to be comfortable talking about it. With our help, we can make sure that families have a plan to prevent bullying, just like they would have a fire escape plan in place at home. Part of our plan is to teach children what bullying looks like so they can take appropriate action. E stands for Elevate Your Awareness. After we teach the children what to look for, we want them to be aware of their surroundings, especially high-risk areas such as recess, away from adult aides, bathrooms, bus stops, the bus, etc. Really, anywhere that a child could be alone or in small numbers with no supervision. The L stands for Learn to Ask for Help. Perhaps this is the most important part. It is estimated that 160,000 children miss school every day due to fear of an attack or intimidation from another student. One in five students reports being bullied. 90% of fourth to eighth graders report being bullied. And 56% of students have personally witnessed someone being bullied at school. We need to let people know that not only is it okay to ask for help, but they should ask for help. Children may not ask for help because they are scared they will look weak, or maybe they made a mistake in the response to being bullied, so they are scared to tell someone in fear they will get in trouble. We need to let our children know that this is more than okay to tell us what's happening. If we know, we can help respond appropriately if a situation escalates to a physical confrontation. Lastly, the P stands for protect your mind and body. I think we can all agree the effects of emotional bullying harm people way more than the effects of physical bullying. Part of our strategy is to help children become more confident and have self-esteem. If they have the right tools, they will never let someone else make them feel inferior. We want our children to have compassion for bullies and be able to walk away. If a child believes the harsh words of another, that can lead to damaging effects that can follow them for the rest of their lives. And the final step, once all the proper measures have been taken, and only then do we teach students that they have a right to defend themselves. No tolerance rules put in place by the school systems lead children to believe that they cannot put their hands on another child. To a point, we agree. But at the end of the day, if a person is in danger, they have the human right to protect themselves. Everyone does. The techniques we teach, for the most part, are not to harm, but to restrain and call for help. In closing, the best way we can help is to put children in environments that encourage and that build confidence and self-esteem. If there's anything we can do to further help our community to put an end to bullying, let us know and we would love to help. I would like everyone to stand, or you can stay seated if you like, and repeat the bully pledge. This is something we've had go out to the school systems and people science. If you'd like to stand and repeat the bully pledge, I'm gonna have some students from my dojo go ahead and read the bully pledge. First up is Rocco.
I believe everyone has the right to feel safe. I will stand strong against bullying. I will treat others with respect and kindness. I will not be a bully.
I will not be a bystander.
I will help others who are being bullied.
I will tell a teacher and parent when I see it or when it happens to me. I will not stand by, I will stand up.
We give the kids a round of applause.
Thanks, guys. Thank you so much.
I'd like to thank the City of Warwick for having me, and Mr. McAllister, I'd like to thank you for having me as well. And thank you again.
Thank you very much, Renchi, and thank you, children. A very important message, and we really appreciate you coming out tonight. So thank you.
Mr. President, I apologize. Is there a way we could have a copy of that bullying pledge, or I could request that?
Sure, we can get that for you.
Thank you so much, Mr. President.
Yep. Next up is general communications. This is the announcement of congratulations, condolences, or community events. I have one. Happy to announce that the playground here in Appanag is open. We're going to have a ribbon cutting for it tomorrow at 3:30. So all are welcome. The playground's been open for about a week now, and it is busy. People are really enjoying it, and I think we should be really proud of that. So if you're available, please bring your kids, 3:30 tomorrow for the ribbon cutting here in Appanag. Are there any other council members that have any other announcements of congratulations, condolences, or community events? Councilman Howe.
Thank you, Mr. President. Just a couple community events I'd like to mention. On Saturday, October 21st at 10 a.m., I'm saying this with my good friend and colleague, Councilman McElroy. There'll be a new business opening right at the border of Ward 3 and in Ward 4 called Now and Then Sports Collectibles. Joe Cabral, who is a neighbor of mine and a very good friend, He is opening the business at 1728 Warwick Avenue, and he's having a grand opening. There'll be food trucks and different things for the kids to do and enjoy. Once again, another small business opening in Warwick. We wish them the best. Also on Saturday, October 21st, from 6 to 8 p.m., is the annual Sand Pond Spooky Path. Wander the haunted paths by the citizens of Sand Pond. They set it up. And visit the creatures that live on the banks of Sand Pond. All ages, events, tricks and treats for the little ones. Costumes are absolutely welcome. Comfortable shoes are definitely suggested. There is a $5 donation requested, however, not required. Parking will be on Puritan Drive and the entrance at the Sand Pond Road and Puritan Drive beach entrance. And one more, Mr. President. On also Saturday, October, on Saturday, October 28th, from 12 to 3 p.m., the Elizabeth Gray Foundation will have the 2023 Dress Your Dog Howl-Oween Competition. It is a family event. A $20 donation is requested. It will be grill, hamburger, hot dogs, chips, and beverages. There'll be a 50-50. That will be at Shannon View Inn under the huge tent at 1901 Post Road in Warwick, Rhode Island. You may sign up in person or visit www.elizabethgrayfoundation.org. Thank you, Mr. President.
Thank you, Councilman. Councilwoman Travis.
Yes, this Wednesday, October 18th, from 6 to 8, there's going to be a Tori Lynn Andreozzi Foundation is going to present a conversation about impaired driving, the law, and a call to action. This is going to be have a lot of our people that are going to be speaking from all the different departments about drunk driving and what it does and how it affects the families. Our own Colonel Connors will be there, and there'll be at least 7 speakers that can give me information out. So this is going to be Wednesday, October 18th at Warwick Veterans Middle School Auditorium.
Thank you, Councilwoman.
You're welcome.
Any additional items under general communications? Councilwoman Travis.
I wanted to do a moment of silence for Ted Sarno's wife, Lois, passed away Thursday. So this is for Lois Sarno.
Thank you. We'll have a moment of silence. Thank you. Anybody else for general communications? Okay, we'll move on to executive communications. There are none. A is the acceptance of the minutes from the council meeting held on October 2nd. Councilman Howe?
Favorable action on
the minutes. Second by Councilman McElroy and Councilman Foley. All those in favor say aye.
Aye.
Aye. Any opposed? Any abstentions? Okay. Thank you. It passes. Excuse me. Next up is public comment, Rule 41. After general communications and prior to the consent calendar, at the last regularly scheduled meeting of the City Council each month, there shall be a period of time not to exceed 30 minutes during which citizens may comment about Warwick City government issues subject to the following stipulations. The total period of time for public comment shall not exceed 30 minutes. Comments need to be brief in order to allow as many citizens as possible to participate. Each citizen signed up and present shall have not to exceed 5 minutes to speak, provided, however, that if more than 6 citizens are signed up and present, the 30 minutes will be split evenly amongst speakers. Time shall not be transferable among speakers. The topics for comments shall be issues directly affecting city government. City Council members will not respond to questions during the public comment period. The public comment session will terminate at the expiration of the earlier of the speakers concluding their allotted time or 30 minutes. Waiver of this provision requires a unanimous vote of the council. We have 2 individuals who have signed up this evening. First off is Richard L.
Richard Langseth, Budlong Farm Road in Warwick. On November 14th, there's going to be a Harbor Commission workshop for Rights Away. Councilman Lattiser is to be congratulated for his work to get this together. What we're going to talk about is the rights of way, and people on both sides are going to be presenting their arguments. One side being myself, of course, when it comes to the Buttonwoods Fire District, and the fire district will probably respond with their comments to the contrary. We will have perhaps a cross-examination of facts, and then the Harbor Commission will move on to other topics. I just want to bring the City Council up to speed on what the issue is at the Buttonwoods Fire District when it comes to rights of way. In 1985, there was Hurricane Gloria. It almost destroyed Promenade Avenue. And in early 1986, the Buttonwoods Fire District appropriated funds, federal funds, to fix the highway in front of it. And now the Buttonwoods Fire District is claiming that it's a private road, even though public funds were expended. There are two kinds of taxes in the city. There are taxes which we normally pay for our houses and our businesses and all that kind of thing. But there's also taxes that are paid when somebody like the sewer authority puts in sewers. They charge per foot taxes for the people who build the sewers, right? Those are taxes too. Now what happens is if those taxes are not high enough, the sewer authority has to move its funding forward to the next group of people. For instance, when Buttonwoods was built for sewers, the tax was like $60 a linear foot. And the fire district and the beach association said, that's it. Although the actual cost at that point was $82, they convinced the sewer authority and the city council that they could get it for, 25% less. That's a burden on the people of Warwick going forward. And for that, one would expect that the people get access to these roads, which they are in advance funding. I want to remind everybody that the Beach Association does pay taxes. However, it doesn't. The entity that pays the taxes is the fire district. Now, can you believe that there's a private corporation built by a developer corporation owned by shareholders that gets a municipality, the fire district, to pay its taxes? And then it turns around and says, oh, we're private. This just simply does not add up. So these are the contentious arguments that we're going to be talking about at the Harbor Commission, and eventually it's going to come before the City Council, and I'm going to keep harping, about these kinds of issues, because things are changing now. There are 7,500 members in our Facebook group, Saving Rhode Island Coastal Access. They're very active, especially in Westerly and in some South County places, but they're also very active in Warwick. And so the people of Warwick are rising, and they're saying, we want coastal access. And what's happening in Warwick, as we all know, new people are moving in. And many of these new people are from the Boston area. These are people who are moving to Warwick, not just because of education, but because of the shoreline. They actually say, well, let's move to Warwick. Let's move south of Providence to Warwick because they have a beautiful shoreline. And then when they get here, they find out that the city of Warwick has 61 streets where there's no parking next to the shore. 61 streets. And many of these are just from the beginning of summer to the end of summer.
You have 1 minute, Mr. Langsa.
Okay. So the argument is, we have to have no parking because it's a safety reason. Well, it's not a safety reason because they can have parking all year round except in the summer. Now, how does that work out? We were driving down Capron Farm Road, not Capron, down Nassauket Road yesterday during the Patriots game. I could hardly get through. An F-100 could not get through. So many people on Nassauket watching the football game. Okay, it's in the fall. In the summer, nobody can go to the beach because it's not safe. But in the fall, everybody can just park anywhere and enjoy themselves and go to their games at their friends' houses. That's all okay. So I just want to bring to your attention a few of these things that we're going to be discussing in detail at the Harbor Commission meeting. And I would appreciate everybody from the City Council to go to this. We had 45 members of the public at the last one. We're probably going to have more at this one. And it's a real good public engagement. And Jody King is to be congratulated for pulling all this together. Thank you very much.
Thank you, sir. The next speaker is Rob C.
Cody Ward 7. Excuse me. So at the September 18th meeting, I was a little concerned because I sat and I watched Councilman McAllister and Councilman Howe violate and manipulate a couple of the city council rules. So I thought I'd bring it to your attention. So the first part of the public hearing, which was of the largest expenditure the city's ever seen of $350 million in schools, we had a public hearing, and Councilman Lattisaw requested from the finance chairman, Mr. Howe, to suspend the rules. Mr. Howe refused to suspend the rules, and that would be Rule 20. As you know, Rule 20 limits everybody from speaking for 10 minutes. But it would, what it also does, if you read the rule and you actually understand it as a council member, it says that Warwick residents may participate in that discussion. Not residents from North Kingstown, not residents from Narragansett. But Mr. Howe allowed people from out of the city to make comment. Actually, there were people from out of state, from the union memberships, that actually made comment. So the point is, do we pick and choose what portions of the rules that we're going to enforce to simply control the dialogue? I wonder, where was the council solicitor to weigh in on the manipulation of the rules? And the second portion, which has never happened before in the history of Warwick during the open mic, is that Councilman Howe decided that he was going to speak at Rule 41 as a private citizen. Well, Mr. Howe, I'm sorry to remind you, but you no longer are a private citizen once you become elected. You're an elected official. And the Council Rule 41 specifically states that council members shall not comment. So the question I have, maybe this is for the council solicitor, do we set a new precedent here? Is anybody from the council now going to be able to say, hey, wait a minute, I'm taking my hat off from the council chambers. Only on this side of the fence am I a council member, an elected official. I'm going to go behind the podium and now I'm going to be a private citizen. Is that what we're going to do? Because you've set a precedent now, Mr. McAllister, by allowing him to do that. And you know as well as I do that whether he's on this side of the railing or on the other side of the railing, he's no longer a private resident. He's an elected official. And he's a city council member, which your rule specifically states to get cannot comment or answer questions. And what he was trying to defend was the point that I brought up, that I had found out from the National Marine Archives that the guy in the corner office got thrown out of the Marine Corps. So he, in an attempt to try to discredit me, was allowed to go back, violate Rule 41, direct violation of the verbiage of Rule 41, and try to combat facts that I brought to you on official city documents, official government documents for that fact. So I would suggest that the council members take a moment to read the council rules by which they were bound, read them, try to understand them. And if you don't, which was obvious on September 18th, you should ask the council solicitor. And if the council solicitor doesn't understand them, we have a problem. And I really have questions as to whether or not he understands the rules after what happened on July 23rd when my First Amendment was violated and he did nothing. He, above all people, should have said, time out. You can't do this. You're violating the First Amendment and you're going to put us in a situation of litigation, which is exactly what's happened. So I would implore you all to do your homework, study the rules so you actually know the content of the rules that you're abiding this council by. Thank you.
Thank you. Next up is the consent calendar. First up is PCR 112-23, resolution relative to bids, committee report, finance.
Favorable action.
For action, Councilman Howe.
Move favorable action.
Second by Councilman Foley. Go ahead, Councilman Howe.
Thank you, Mr. President. Bid 2024-248, bid 2024-116, 2024-244, 2024-247, 2024-243, 2023-318 Alpha, 2024-246, 2024-249, 2024-158. That concludes the consent calendar on bids, Mr. President.
Thank you, Councilman. Any questions or comments from members of the council that were not asked earlier this evening in Finance Committee? Okay, that is the only thing that's on the consent calendar. So the clerk will call the roll for favorable action.
Mr. McAllister?
Yes.
Mr. Foley?
Yes.
Mr. Howe?
Yes.
Mr. Lattisa?
Yes.
Mr. McElroy?
Yes.
Mr. Ricks?
Yes.
Mr. Nappy?
Yes.
Ms. Travis?
Yes.
Eight yeses.
Thank you. The consent calendar passes. I believe two items were pulled from the consent calendar. Councilman Howe.
Yes, Mr. President. They were recommended favorable action. So it was bid 2024-223, crack ceiling contract is now PCR 113-23, as amended. Favorable action.
Okay, and you're going to change the amount to 115,000?
Yes, Mr. President. The request was to change the total amount, for increase it $40,000, and because it's one-third matched by the state, therefore increasing the total to $115,000.
Okay, we'll take that as an amendment, as a motion. Do we have a second to that? Second by Councilman Foley. Any questions or comments on the amendment? Hearing none, the clerk will call a roll on the amendment.
Mr. McAllister?
Yes.
Mr. Foley?
Yes.
Mr. Howe?
Yes.
Mr. Lattiser?
Yes.
Mr. McElroy?
Yes.
Mr. Ricks?
Yes.
Mr. Sinapi?
Yes.
Ms. Travis?
Yes.
8 yes to amend.
Thank you. Councilman Howe, would you like to move it favorable as amended?
Move favorable as amended.
Second by Councilman Foley. Any questions or comments? Hearing none, the clerk will call a roll for favorable action as amended.
Mr. McAllister?
Yes.
Mr. Foley?
Yes.
Mr. Howe?
Yes.
Mr. Lattiser?
Yes.
Mr. McElroy?
Yes.
Mr. Ricks?
Yes.
Mr. Sinapi?
Yes.
Ms. Travis?
Yes.
8 yes as amended.
Thank you. Motion passes. The second item that was pulled, Councilman Howe.
Thank you, Mr. President. It was bid 2024-245. The monthly service and maintenance for composting toilets is now PCR 114-23, as amended, favorable action.
And you're looking to go for 2 years at a new total of $12,000?
Yes, Mr. President. It was an increase of $5,800 from $6,200 to $12,000, and increase the time from 1 to 2 years.
All right, we'll take that as a motion, and we have a second by Councilman Foley. Any questions, or Councilwoman Travis, any questions or comments on the amendment? Hearing none, the clerk will call the roll for favorable action on the amendment.
Mr. McAllister?
Yes.
Mr. Foley?
Yes.
Mr. Howe?
Yes.
Mr. Lattiser?
Yes.
Mr. McElroy?
Yes.
Mr. Ricks?
Yes.
Mr. Sinapi?
Yes.
Ms. Travis?
Yes.
8 yes to amend.
Thank you. Councilman Howe, would you like to move that favorable action as amended?
Move PCR 114-23 as amended.
Second by Councilman Foley and Councilwoman Travis. Any questions or comments? Hearing none, the clerk will call a roll for favorable action as amended.
Mr. McAllister?
Yes.
Mr. Foley?
Yes.
Mr. Howe?
Yes.
Mr. Lattiser?
Yes.
Mr. McElroy?
Yes.
Mr. Ricks?
Yes.
Mr. Sinapi?
Yes.
Ms. Travis?
Yes.
8 yes as amended. Motion passes.
Thank you. Motion passes. Thank you, Councilman Howe.
Thank you.
Next up is PCO 20-23, an ordinance amending the City of Warwick zoning ordinances. Committee report, land use.
Recommend public hearing.
Okay, Councilman McElroy.
Move favorable action, Mr. President.
For a public hearing?
Yes.
Second by Councilman Ricks, Councilman Howe. Okay. All those in favor to move into a public hearing? Aye.
Aye.
Any opposed? Okay. So at this time, we're going to ask if there's anyone here to present PCO 20-23, and then we will have a presentation from the petitioners, and we will have an opportunity for members of the council to ask questions on that. Then I will ask the public if there are members of the public that would like to speak in favor of this. Then we'll have an opportunity for members of the public who would like to speak against this. And then we'll have another opportunity if members of the public just like to be heard on this. So at this time, is there anyone here to present PCO 20-23? Yeah. Okay. And then we have the stenographer here, so I ask everyone to please identify themselves, speak slowly and into the microphone.
Good evening, Tom Kravitz, the city planning director. To my left is Dan Geegan, the deputy planner. I got to take a second to say that Dan has done a ton of work related to not only this particular cell tower agreement that we'll talk about later, but all the other agreements came up for expiration, and he renegotiated all of them, did a tremendous job on that. So this is just one of the other projects. As you know, this tower, for some bizarre reason, electrically caught fire and had to be replaced. There was a temporary tower there for about a year and a half or so, and we were able to work with, and Dan actually put out the RFP to construct a new tower in this facility just adjacent to the field. One of the reasons, primary reason, really, it was relocated to be notched out inside the wood line is because the field was initially constructed with National Park Service money, and it was, we were strongly encouraged by DEM. Really, the original tower really shouldn't have been put there in the first place, so we elected to put it right off, and we had city property just to the southeast of it, with the tree line actually providing at least two-thirds of some cover. So we thought that was the most appropriate thing to do. The planning board endorsed this. You have their positive advisory. George Watson is here to my right. He's representing the applicant and can answer any questions you have. But it's pretty straightforward. We know that this is going to greatly enhance what is existing poor service in this part of the city. So that's something that I think all the residents will appreciate. At least that's what we've heard up to this point, certainly through the planning board and whatnot. So with that, I'll just be here for questions if there are any.
Thank you, Director. Councilman McElroy, this is in your ward. Any questions or comments?
No, I move favorable action. This is something that is sorely needed in the area. It will greatly improve cell phone service, and I wholeheartedly approve it.
Thank you. Any questions or comments from members of the council? Councilman Lattiser.
Yes, thank you, Mr. President. I would just like to ask the representative from Verizon. So with this new tower, and I concur with Councilman McElroy, I represent Ward 5, just so that you know. And we have three or four areas on Warwick Neck Avenue, total drop-offs. I have the same thing on West Shore Road. I get complaints down on Tidewater and essentially throughout in my area. So my understanding is that the new tower is going to be slightly taller. And I particularly am hoping to hear from you that we can all rest assured that our service in that area will be increased.
Sorry. Good evening. My name is George Watson. I'm attorney of Robinson Cole, and we are outside counsel for Verizon Wireless, Celco Partnership, DBA Verizon Wireless. Thank you for the opportunity to speak. And want to begin by saying that the original tower was not ours. Just want to get that on the record. So this tower will be slightly taller. It's going to be 120 feet tall, and that allows for three carriers to go on it. So Verizon will be on top, so we'll have the best coverage, because the higher you are, the better the coverage, but there will also be two additional carriers on there. I do have with me tonight, we have Keith Vellante from C-Square, and also Sylvester Bembe from, yes, it's V-E-L-L-A-N-T-E, C, the letter C square, and then Sylvester Bembe, B-H-E-M-B-E, from T-E-P. And so as far as the coverage maps, Mr. Vellante can speak to the coverage maps and what, you know, how the service will be different with this, how Verizon service will be different with this structure. I can't speak to the other carriers, and I'm not an engineer, so I can't tell you that information directly. But
thank you, and just please introduce yourself for the record.
Sure. Good evening. My name is Keith Vellante, V as in Victor, E-L-L-A-N-T-E, with C-Squared Systems. Business address is 65 Dartmouth Drive, Auburn, New Hampshire. As part of the materials we prepared, as for this proposal, is Verizon, we prepared a radio frequency report that described Verizon's network in the area and how the proposed site would fill in a gap in coverage and a need for their network. That report's dated August 8th, 2023, but in that, at the end, there's a set of coverage maps. What the site will do is provide substantial coverage along West Shore Road, out towards Conemicut Point Park, as well as Church Ave, Sandy Lane, that whole area of town. The gap, the coverage gap as it stands today is quite sizable. The single facility isn't going to fill the entire area, but it does fill a substantial portion of it. Roughly 7,000 residents in the area would have adequate coverage that do not at present from Verizon's network. Welcome.
Any other questions or comments from members of the council? Okay, at this time, for the public hearing, I'm going to ask, are there any members of the public that would like to speak in favor of this project? Are there any members of the public that would like to speak in favor of this project? Are there any members of the public that would like to speak in favor of this project? Are there any members of the public that would like to speak against this project? Just please come up to the microphone and identify yourself.
Good evening. My name is Paul Blakesley. I live in the city of Warwick. I'm here to object to this zone change. It's called a zone change.
I'm just going to speak into the mic.
I'm a bit confused by it, and I'm not a public speaker, and I really don't know where to start. But I was here back in 2022 when this council approved a solar ordinance, and every member here stood up and bragged about making democracy work. That solar ordinance was to protect open space. Something that was obvious at the meeting was that there was a big public push for the protection of open space as represented by that ordinance. And this council fell all over themselves to make sure that it got done, and that's great. However, following that, the same council refused to put a referendum, a bond issue, on the ballot for money for the protection and purchase of open space in the city of Warwick. And so this issue with this zoning change is about open space. And I personally do not understand why the city of Warwick is using public spaces to do business with private enterprises. It seems to me that they're perfectly capable and of finding places that are not going to impact public open space, land owned by the city of Warwick. I understand that the city is obligated to help telecommunications find sites, and I understand that. This project goes back to 1998 when the zoning board approved the construction of a tower that was supposed to be 75 feet tall. And they did not change zoning. The zoning was open space. And I don't know what the zoning ordinance looked like at that time, but they approved it, and they approved a tower that was taller than was allowed in that district. But they did not change the zoning. Now the city is the city is asking to change the zoning of this, but there is no zoning district for it. They're asking for a change in zoning from open space to open space A-611. And in my study of the zoning ordinance, I don't find any zoning in the ordinance, any A-611 in the ordinance. So I'm confused. Are we meeting here tonight to approve a zoning change? And if so, what are the requirements for this zone? There's nothing presented about what this zone is, what its rules and regulations are, and so forth. And it's kind of curious, because if they were really making a zoning change, they'd also change the rules about setbacks, height, and screening, and everything else. So they wouldn't be asking for all the variances that they're asking for in this zone change. And the other thing about it is that I find all kinds of errors in the, well, I don't know if they're errors or not, but I find all these discrepancies in the material that's been presented to this council to make a big decision with. Well, I think it's a big decision to make a decision with. The names of the streets are mislabeled. The address of the project is not what it says it is in the application. The maps that they show, which are the proposed zoning plot plan, they show an area where this open space A611 is shown, and it consists of four lots. And the legal descriptions of those four lots are listed in another document, but the application is for five lots. One of the lots that's not shown on the map is the biggest one, 5.3 acres, which is the ball field itself, which is where the tower was located and where the current, what's the acronym they have for it, is the COW. That's where the COW is located. And evidently that location is not any good because of DEM, I think that was referred to earlier. I'm not quite sure of what that's about. So anyway, they're asking for this change the zone with faulty documentation and making a zoning change to accept telecommunication towers in a zone, open space, which is strictly prohibited. The zoning ordinance that we look at today says no, there'll be no cell towers in this zone. And there's no special permit exception, and there's another, I forget the wording of it, but it has to do with another sort of approval, which is granted in other zones, but it's not part of open space. So I guess what I'm saying is you people need to look at the documentation, because if you're making a legal decision, you got a problem. And of course, the fact that you're moving it from open space that's already been developed into a ball field and has been there for many, many years, and taking it and moving it into a wooded area that separates the ball field from a residential area, and those trees are going to get chopped down to do this. I don't know, if you have to do it on public land, do it where it's already developed and where it's already open, and put the damn tower up. And the restriction on height in this residential area around it, which is part of the 611 use designation, the description of telecommunications facilities.
You have 1 minute, sir.
I what? I'm sorry, what was that?
You have 1 minute left.
The height restriction in that neighborhood is 35 feet. This tower is going to be 120 feet. A minor height adjustment, as they referred to earlier, goes from a 75-foot tower to a 120-foot tower in this open space, which is supposed to be open space for the public and not developed. I don't know. I hope you people come to your senses and say, yeah, let's look for this somewhere else. Like maybe in the fire department just down the road, maybe they have a little square where this tower can be built, or maybe even in the mayor's backyard. Maybe he can hang Christmas lights on it. Thank you.
Thank you, sir. Director Kravitz, would you like to answer any of those or respond at this time?
Tom Kravitz, City Planning Director. The executive powers rest with the council to approve this with the exceptions related to the ordinance. What we're talking about in the memorandum that we sent to the council was dated August 16th, 23. Those exceptions are from sections 506. That's the cell tower ordinance in effect. And while I appreciate what the resident is saying about, of course, you don't want to put cell towers in open space zoned areas. The tower has been here for years. The fall radius works. It's been there. So it's an area where we know it works. And the power rests with the council to approve it. So that's really all. I think it is the best place given the situation. If this was happening from day one and there was nothing there, we'd probably look at it differently. But it's an existing condition we're trying to fix. That's really all I have.
Thank you. Are there any other individuals that would like to speak against this project? Are there any other members of the public here that would like to speak against this project? Are there any other individuals that would like to speak against this project? Are there any members of the public that would like to be heard on this topic? Are there any members of the public that would like to be heard? Last call, is there any members of the public that would like to be heard on this topic? Okay, hearing none, can I get a motion to close the public hearing, Councilman Foley?
Move to close public hearing.
Second by Councilman Ricks, Councilman Howe, and Councilman McElroy. Okay. Any additional questions or comments, Councilman Sinapi? Sorry, we have to vote that. All in favor of closing the public hearing, say aye. Aye. Any opposed? Okay, Councilman Sinapi.
To the resident's point, some of the documentation does show that in the responses from the various departments, one of the department heads did point out the address should not be 176 Winter, it should be 122 Winter. And it pointed out that 176 is a private residence. And when you look at the GIS, that's true. 176 Winter is in fact somebody's house, whereas 122 Winter Avenue seems to be the plot in question that they were trying to get to, because that's city land.
Do you have a motion or anything on that?
I'm no land use expert, so I assume Director Kravitz has commentary on this one way or another.
I would defer to the map and lots listed. If in fact that was a mistake. Yeah, we acknowledge the mistake in the address and we'll rest on the proper map and lots also listed in the advertisement, which I think are plat 332, lots 396 through 97, 402, 403, and 470.
Okay, can you just repeat that, Director? I know you're looking for something. I just want to get.
No, I acknowledge the mistake in the address, but I would rest on the maps and lots listed in the other advertisements, the approval of the planning board, that they're the correct map and lots.
So you're comfortable with how it's drafted at this time?
Yeah.
Okay. Mr. Snappy?
I'm just trying to check. I see assessor's plat 332, and I do see lot 470 on the lot in question, the one that's supposed to be the correct one. So it, those two are called out on the documentation. So as long as it's fine for us to vote on from the solicitor's angle, then I'm fine with it.
Councilman Ricks.
Thank you. Yes, I would also like to get some clarification on the point that Councilman Snappy raised regarding the making sure that the notices were in compliance, both the notices that went out to the abutters as well as the notices in relation to this particular public hearing. I also just wanted to add that I don't believe that the member of the public brought up this item in particular, but on him raising a concern about some of the labeling on the map, I did notice that there are two different streets parallel to each other on the map that was provided, both labeled Ardway Avenue. And so I am not very familiar with Connecticut, but I wanted to just raise that to make sure that that was not also an error. I don't think that that would necessarily be as serious an error as the mislabeling, or if it was mislabeling, or if the wrong numbers were included in the notices or the on the agenda themselves. But if the issues that Councilman Snappy raised are also, if there would be an impediment created by those, then I would also just suggest that the map and the names of those various streets also just be checked. Thank you.
Director?
Yeah, and looking at it more closely, I think what's important is there are four lots where the new tower is going to be. It's 396, 397, 402, and 403. And those lots are correctly listed. So the other stuff we're talking about is perhaps a bit superfluous by way of additional information. We have the right lots, and we have additional information that is perhaps mislabeled. But it's important that we have the four lots on that are going to be the location of the tower, in my opinion.
Solicitor Walsh?
I think the... If we look at the underlying ordinance that was the PCO 2023, the discrepancy about the specific number, even though we're dealing with multiple lots here and multiple streets, is not on the underlying PCO. The descriptions of Winter Avenue and Loring Avenue are additional identificators to trying to give the general public awareness of the general vicinity, but the legal parameters that we're dealing with are the changes of the assessor's plat and lots that have been disclosed and presented in all the underlying documents, but most importantly in the PCO that's before you this evening.
Mr. President. Any additional questions? Councilman Lattiser.
Mr. President, just for... a clarification, I believe that the resident that spoke to us before has not been to a city council meeting in quite some time. He appeared to not be familiar with the 10-minute rule, as an example, and I know he's trying to draw your attention now to be recognized again, so I think perhaps you might want to just explain to him, if you could, what the rules are regarding public hearing. I don't want the resident to feel as though he's being ignored or neglected. Thank you.
Okay. So as Councilman Lattiser points out, we had the public hearing, and then that was the vote that we took to close the public hearing. So now at this time, it would just be council members that are able to address and ask questions. However, I will ask if there's any objections. We do have one individual that is here. He would like to say one more thing. Is I would give him additional 2 more minutes to have a say. If there's any objections from the council on that, so with no objection, so move. So, sir, we'll give you 2 additional minutes on this. We're kind of suspending the rules on this to give you 2 additional minutes.
Thank you. A very quick point. The drawings that have been proposed of this proposed project don't show the entire area that's being subject to this zone change. And that reflects also in the radius or a map, which is everyone within 200 feet, I think is the rule, is required to be notified of a public hearing or whatever the zoning board is doing and all of that. There's a 200 feet from the all edges of the property. That's not reflected in the drawings that have been presented, which means that a big portion of the population that lives around this project haven't been notified. And to me, that really blows this public hearing. And the other thing is that we're asking for a zone change of zone from one zone to another zone, which is not in the zoning ordinance. And it seems to me that that would be the first order of business of this council, would be to create a new zoning or a new zone called Open Space A-611, if that's what you want to call it, and you need to define it. And that's not been done. So you're asking to change to a zone that has no requirements.
Yeah.
This just doesn't seem legal to me. Thanks.
Thank you. Now, just so we're all on the same page, I believe that the director is comfortable with what is before us, and the solicitor is as well. So I just want to go ahead, director.
Yeah, one quick thing. I was speaking with Dan. Is when you Google Clegg Field, it comes up at 176 Winter Avenue. And it's interesting. That's how we even reference it on the city's website. So shame on us for not double checking Google, but I think that's where the error came from, which is just interesting. And I was just talking to Mr. Watson, and it's his recommendation that we probably don't have to list lot 470 in the resolution, because that's the actual bigger play field. So technically we don't need to put that lot in the resolution. If you wanted to strike it, that would be fine.
Councilman Sinapi.
So that might not be a bad idea, because the abutters that were reached out to, 470 is not on the list for the lots. It's all the other ones, 396, 397, 402, and 403. So technically the abutters for 470 weren't contacted, but apparently they didn't need to be, because this didn't need to be part of it.
We did that deliberately to try to reach out to more people, thinking that's the right thing to do, even though we didn't have to do the abutter radius from 470. It is a tower, so.
Councilman Ricks.
Thank you. And I think that, yeah, also reviewing that abutters list as well as the radius map in Exhibit 3, so comparing Exhibits 3 and 5, it certainly looks to me like reasonable notice went out, even if superfluously, as you put it, there was that wrong or incorrect reference number as to Winter Ave. It seems that certainly the required legal notice of specifying those precise lots, that went out properly. And there was also the reference to Clegg Field. So I think that it appears to me that the notice went out to the right people, and more than that, went out to additional people, which is always a good thing. And then it also appears that the people were put sufficiently on notice of where this tower specifically is to be constructed. So I think that the member of the public commenting on the use code itself may not be familiar with the zoning ordinance in this regard. So it being designated as open space with the use code of 611, that certainly does not create a Wild West situation here, but rather specifically designates this area as remaining as open space. However, specifically allowing for a telecommunication facility, including towers, which is exactly what is being proposed here. So if I'm mistaken on that, one of the attorneys can please correct me. But based on what I'm seeing here, I think that some good points were raised, and I think it's important for us to, of course, do our due diligence to make sure that the notice is proper, everything conforms with the legal requirements. And after this discussion, I'm satisfied that it seems that those legal requirements were met in this situation.
Thank you. Councilman McElroy?
I go with my first inclination. I move favorable passage on this.
Second by Councilman Foley, Councilman Ricks, Councilman Howe. Any questions or comments on the motion? Hearing none, the clerk will call the roll for favorable action.
Mr. McAllister?
Yes.
Mr. Foley?
Yes.
Mr. Howe?
Yes.
Mr.
Yes. Mr.
McElroy?
Yes.
Mr. Ricks?
Yes.
Mr. Snappy?
Yes.
Ms. Trapp?
Yes.
Thank you for first passage. Thank you. Thank you, Director. We're now moving on to unfinished business. First up is PCR 63-23, Committee Report, Public Safety.
Recommend favorable action.
For action, Councilman Foley.
Move favorable action on the claim of Leah DeLeon. Councilman Ricks, can you help me on that? What was the exact dollar amount?
$263.59.
Correct.
Okay, do we have a second for that? Second by Councilman Ricks and Councilman McElroy. Any questions or comments that were not asked earlier this evening in committee? Councilman Lattiser.
Thank you, Mr. President. So given my observations with what's been going on with these claims, my question is, perhaps maybe the committee should start reviewing all of these claims, because it appears that more often than not, the committee is overruling the decision from the Director of Public Works. So why are we having him go through that exercise when it's just being overturned? Perhaps instead of having him go through that exercise, he might be able to better direct his time and energy into other issues that we have in all of our wards. So just a suggestion and just my observation with what's been occurring with these claims. Thank you.
Thank you. Any other questions or comments? Councilman Foley.
As the president of council knows and the council solicitor know, I have been in communication with the solicitor looking at a way to make this more efficient and more effective so that these issues don't come in front of the committee. So I have been proactive in working and trying to work on a solution to the issues raised by other members of the council. Thank you.
Any other questions or comments on PCR 63-23? Hearing none, the clerk will call a roll for favorable action.
McAllister?
Yes.
Mr. Foley?
Yes.
Mr. Howe?
Yes.
No.
Mr. McElroy?
Yes.
Mr. Ricks?
Yes.
Thank you. Motion passes. We're now moving on to new business. First up is PCO 21-23 committee report ordinance.
Withdrawn at the request of the sponsor.
So a motion to withdraw. Do we have a second? Second by Councilman Ricks. Any questions or comments on this? Hearing none, a vote for favorable action is to withdraw. The clerk will call the roll.
Mr. McAllister?
Yes.
Mr. Foley?
Yes.
Mr. Howe?
Yes.
Yes.
Mr. Ricks?
Yes.
Mr. Snappy?
Yes.
Ms. Travis?
Yes.
8 yes to withdraw.
Thank you. Next up is PCR 109-23, Committee Report Intergovernmental.
Favorable action, Mr. President.
For action, Councilman Foley.
Move favorable action.
Second by Councilman Howe and Councilman Lattiser. Any questions or comments that were not asked earlier this evening? Hearing none, the clerk will call a roll for favorable action.
Mr. McAllister?
Yes.
Mr. Foley?
Yes.
Mr. Howe?
Yes.
Mr. Lattiser? Mr. McElroy?
Yes.
Mr. Ricks?
Yes.
Snappy?
Yes.
Ms. Travis?
Yes.
8 yes.
Thank you. Motion passes. Next up is PCR 110-23. Committee report, public properties.
Recommend favorable action.
For action, Councilman McElroy.
Recommend favorable action.
Second by Councilman Howe, Councilman Ricks, Councilman Foley. Any questions or comments that were not asked earlier this evening in committee? Hearing none, the clerk will call a roll for favorable action.
Mr. McAllister?
Yes.
Mr. Foley?
Yes.
Mr. Howe?
Yes.
Mr. Lattiser? Mr. McElroy?
Yes.
Mr. Ricks?
Yes.
Thank you. Motion passes. Number four this evening is PCR 111-23, Committee Report Intergovernmental.
Favorable action, Mr. President.
Councilwoman Travis, can you move this for me, please? Second by Councilman Lattiser, Councilman Foley, Councilman McElroy. Any questions or comments that were not asked earlier this evening in committee? Hearing none, the clerk will call a roll for favorable action.
Mr. McAllister?
Yes.
Mr. Foley?
Yes.
Yes.
Mr.
Yes.
Mr. McElroy?
Yes.
Mr. Ricks?
Yes.
Mr. Snappy?
Yes.
Ms. Travis?
Yes.
8 yes, motion passes.
Thank you. Motion passes. Ward 1, anything to docket under unanimous consent?
Pass.
Ward 2?
Pass.
Ward 3?
Pass.
Ward 4?
Pass.
Ward 5? Ward 6?
Pass.
Ward 7 passes. Ward 8? Councilwoman Travis? All those in favor moving to docket session say aye.
Aye.
Aye. Any opposed? Any abstentions? We are now in the docket session. Ward 1, anything to docket this evening?
No, thank you.
Ward 2?
Pass.
Ward 3?
Pass.
Ward 4?
Pass.
Ward 5? Ward 6?
Pass.
Ward 7 passes. Ward 8? We are adjourned. Thank you very much.